In this episode of Movie Wallahs, we go a cappella with Pitch Perfect and we talk about the Toronto International Film Festival 2012. It's time for Movie Wallahs. Hi, this is Joe.
Hello, it's Rashmi.
I'm completely tone deaf, so I'm not going to try to sing.
Go on, do it.
A cappella, my introduction. Hello, everyone. That's all you're going to get.
Movie Wallahs is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an aeroplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. And Yasti is the one that's drunk this evening. I know. Like,
what?
Rashmi and I are sat here. We've had like Diet Cokes and a glass of water. Rashmi's drinking a cup of tea. Yazdi's at the end of a bottle of wine. And here we are. We're being the party ones.
Excuse me. Just to be clear, the bottle of wine was not consumed entirely by myself. I had company who helped me finish the bottle of wine, but the bottle of wine was completed. Yes.
It was opened and it was ended. And you were there the whole time.
That's correct.
I rest my case.
I'd be guilty.
I kind of felt like we should sing this one.
So the reason for all of this geniality here is the movie Pitch Perfect is all about a cappella singing. So I think, should we just get straight into it?
Let's do it.
who's introing this? Rashmi, go ahead.
So that is the gimmick, Joe. I mean, it's a movie about a cappella. So Becca is that girl who'd rather listen to what's coming out of her headphones than what's coming out of you. Arriving at her new college, she finds herself not right for any clique, but somehow is muscled into the one that she thought she would never have picked on her own. Alongside mean girls, sweet girls, and weird girls, whose only thing in common is how good they sound when they sing together, rather like a good Movie Wallahs episode. So this is really a college drama that explores growing up when you don't quite fit in. This is directed by Jason Moore, written by Kay Cannon, and stars Anna Kendrick, Rebel Wilson, Anna Camp, Brittany Snow, Skylar Astin, Ben Knapp, and even an appearance from Christopher Mintz-Plasse, amongst others. So, Joe, why don't you start us off on this one?
I bet you think I'm going to hate this movie because this really isn't my cup of tea. This kind of teeny bopper stuff doesn't generally float my boat, but despite the fact that this is musical numbers by the numbers, the fact that we've seen this film 100 times before, you know, Bring It On, I think, is the one that springs to mind, any kind of team sports. There are no surprises here, but it was a really enjoyable movie. The performances were great fun. I think the reworks of modern and classic 80s pops were done very well, and I found myself smiling despite myself from start to finish.
And you don't like musicals generally. I mean,
no.
You hated Rock of Ages, and you just... Actually, again, just for all those listening, the first thing that Joe said to me, said, this isn't going to be Glee, is it? And I said, I don't know.
Yeah, I was worried about people bursting into song mid-conversation, and that didn't happen here. So all of the music was at least constrained to competition.
Okay, Yazdi.
So, Joe, I'm sitting in the same seat that you are. I mean, this film is sort of an anachronism in my head. I mean, this movie, which is a mashup of Bring It On and Glee and Mean Girls, is clearly targeted at a very specific demographic. And
Joe,
I know I shouldn't like it. And parts of it are uneven and some are just overdone. But here's the thing. The whole movie is so darned earnest. It's like a puppy nipping at your ankles. And I don't have the will to poop on this film. And I have to admit, you know, the movie is genuinely funny in some parts and it has some undeniable singing talent. So I have to go ahead and pat this puppy on the head. Sue me, I like this movie.
So I'm probably that demographic, you know, the would-be tween who this is supposed to appeal to. Welcome to the funniest movie of 2012, bar none. If you're feeling down, if you're even feeling a little bit sorry for yourself, go and see this film. I'm going to buy this on DVD and watch it at that time of the month, every month. This hits all the notes and gives us growing up in a melodious way. I really enjoyed this movie and I did not stop smiling, and only did I stop smiling when I was laughing from my belly.
Now, did you say the funniest or the funnest?
The funnest.
Okay, yeah, because I didn't think it was like side-splitting comedy, but I did have fun the whole time.
It was just the funnest movie ever.
Okay.
So, I mean, here's the thing, right? I mean, you're doing something which has been done 100 times before, but I think if you are earnest about it and if you're not doing it by the numbers and if you're not lazy And if you just have your heart in it, it seems like everybody really had their heart in it. There was something genuine which came through, you know, almost every minute of the movie. And I think it's very hard to put your finger on it, but I could sense that in the movie. Go on.
You said this isn't by the numbers. I think this is totally formulaic. Because, I mean, for me, it's like a movie that we've seen 100 times. Weird girl, new environment, tries to break into a group of other girls. And, you know, there's one controlling girl that she has to kind of win over, and she ultimately does. And then they go ahead and enter a competition and so on and so forth. So this is so typical. But I think the earnestness is that you mentioned here, the fact that everyone really went for it, the fact that they committed to these performances where they had to sing their heart out, and they made this whole concept. I don't know if a cappella competitions like this exist within schools. I mean, I think if it was in my school, anyone going near it would have been beaten up and kicked out. So, and I, you know, I didn't go to the School of Hard Knocks. It's just that's the kind of thing that people thought was stupid. But they really did a good job of convincing me that these competitions meant something.
Yeah, and I think Yazdi, you've hit the nail on the head. It's so heartfelt. I mean, this is such a silly story, but it's got great characters. And I think the thing I admired the most was most of the main characters, and there are quite a few, each have their own arc, and each of those own arcs work very well.
Yes.
And they come together really nicely. And of course, it's predictable and it's gimmicky because it's a musical and everything seems to be a musical these days. But it's not Glee and it works. And when you're not marveling at the ability of these people to do a cappella, because they had really good voices and the arrangements were really good to listen to, I thought there was enough humor between scenes to keep you going from one to the next set piece.
Yeah, for me, you know, the absolute winner in this movie was the back and forth between Elizabeth Banks and John Michael Higgins,
yeah.
You know, who played these live commentators for the a cappella singing competition. And you know, as I was preparing for this movie, I was surprised to find the film is actually produced by the real life husband and wife team of Max Handelman and Elizabeth Banks. So somehow they really, you know, it's based on a book that was written by someone, and Elizabeth Banks really liked it. And incidentally, the original role that Elizabeth Banks played was written for Kristen Wiig, who could not be in the movie. But I think, you know, Elizabeth Banks does a great job.
She's great.
And I love the fact that, you know, she can be in a movie, you know, as mainstream as the underrated People Like Us, which we talked about earlier in the year. And then she can do something so over the top as The Hunger Games or what she does in this movie. So I like that she kind of bet on this horse. And I think this horse kind of wins the race. So good on her.
Yeah. I mean, just to be clear, she's in the movie for all of 3 minutes from start to finish. They have these very small ancillary roles, but they have all the best lines. And I don't think
it was
intentional that they saved all the best lines for themselves. They were playing these very sarcastic commentators that were, you know, kind of overseeing these competitions. And, you know, it was almost a satirical look at what was going on at, you know, it's like really everyone cares so much about this high school a cappella competition. But they were really good fun. Yeah, I agree with you on that.
Yeah, and it's no doubt inspired by Best in Show, you know, the Christopher Guest mockumentary where, you know, this commentator's talking about the dogs. You know, they were the funniest part of the movie. But anyway, yeah. and you know, I don't want to just single out, like you said, Rashmi, every little character's piece kind of worked pretty well within the confines of what that character was about.
Yeah. And two hardworking actresses, Anna Kendrick, who we just talked about in End of Watch, and Rebel Wilson, who we're going to talk about in Bachelorette. I mean, they were just great. And I also love Anna Kapp, who I've loved since True Blood.
Who's Anna Kapp?
She was in about season 3 or 4 of True Blood, and she played that minister's wife.
Okay.
She was that very prissy character.
Yes. Oh, yes, yes.
And she was great. It takes a lot to be hateable, but someone who you're kind of rooting for at the same time, and I think she did that perfectly.
And I like that Anna Kendrick, again, you know, she kind of brought this, you know, initially, I'm too cool for this, you know, vibe, but then someone who grows to accept, you know, the group that she's part of. And, you know, I didn't know that Kendrick actually began her career on Broadway and was actually nominated at the age of 12 for a Tony Award. So, you know, she has a lot of singing chops. Who knew that, you know?
She's so versatile.
It's just amazing. Yeah.
Well, you know, I was thinking about this. I mean, I think she showed good range here. I mean, she's still the all-American girl, and I think her looks will never allow her to be anything other than that, unless she changes, you know, her hair or her kind of her sweetness. But her range is incredible, given that we saw her in End of Watch, in which was essentially a very gritty drama, mm-hmm. and then we see her in something as lighthearted and fun as this, and she delivers both very well indeed.
And so, I remember she's, you know, been in Twilight, and she was nominated for Up in the Air.
That's right. So she has terrific range here. I mean, she's always going to be limited, I think, to the kind of characters that she plays. I'd love to see her play some bad girl gone wrong, but
I think she could do that.
I think she can, and I love that her physicality is so unusual. I mean, you know, nobody looks like her. I mean, she's not your pretty starlet, you know, and she has such an interesting face, and she almost reminds me of Shelley Duvall. And, you know, so I like that somebody like her is right now in Hollywood, who's been giving this chance to demonstrate her versatility. So yeah.
The other point on Kendrick before we move away is she plays like this young teenager in this movie, but in the other movie she was playing
an adult
mid-20-something. So again, just the fact that her looks lend herself to this wide array of potential characters means that she's got she's in a really good place, I think, in her career.
And Rebel Wilson, I mean, she's having her year this year. I mean, we saw her, I think we, you know, she's a very famous comedian from Australia. So, you know, we saw her in Bridesmaids last year, and she was really funny, but, you know, I'm glad to see her getting bigger roles.
Pun not intended.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the only problem I had was there was one too many fat jokes. And, you know, I'm okay with a fat joke, but I just felt that too many of the gags here were at the expense of the fact that she's larger than most girls.
Yeah, but even then, I liked what she did with it. She kind of empowered it. She kind of said, I'm big, I'm here, and I take... You know, this is how I am. This is what I choose to do. And I kind of liked her spin on it, which was not to be the victim.
I agree.
But to be the person who can laugh about it. And
I don't buy any of that. I know that's the portrayal, but I think she goes home at night and cries. But that's just my own take on her psychology.
Is that the inner fat boy speaking?
It is. It's the insightful, self-deprecating, slightly larger than most teenager talking here.
All right, anything else, or are we ready to wind up?
I'm good.
Okay, so Yazdi, why don't you start us off?
I mean, I walked into this film ready to hate it. There was nothing about it that appealed to me. I almost went in, you know, thinking of it as a chore, and I came out completely delighted. I have respect for somebody who takes a genre and just does it earnestly, does it well, and does it with heart. This is how you should do it. Well done. I give it 7.5 out of 10, and I'm going to back down to 7.
All right.
Joe.
Same score as me. I think this movie hit all the right notes. It's not my thing, but, you know, given that we have to score things here on the show, I'm going to give it 7, just like Yazdi.
So is this going to be a cult classic like Clueless or Breakfast Club? No, likely not, but it does have a great Simple Minds song in it, which I love. Pitch Perfect sounded great and was a pleasure to watch. Aka, go and see this one. I'm going to give this one an 8 out of 10.
And I love the fact that here's a movie which is kind of giving credit to the John Hughes movies of the 80s. I mean, most people don't even know who John Hughes was, and there's parts of Breakfast Club in it. There's the song, there's a mashup. So, you know, and any filmmaker which is going to introduce people to the works of John Hughes, you know, they're doing good by my books.
Yeah, it was fun. I was pleasantly surprised. And like you, Yazdi, as soon as I had the sense when we got into the movie theater that this was going to be Glee, I was just like you. I was like, I think I should leave because I'm only going to hate this movie, and that's not fair. But no, I had a really good time.
And a bag of popcorn.
And a bag of popcorn.
Probably a bag and a half.
It was a bag and a half of popcorn, yeah. They sold me stale popcorn. This is one of my pet peeves. You go and buy popcorn, and like you get something that's a day old, and you pick it up, and it's like chewy, not crispy. Fortunately, they're pretty good about giving you a new bag, but it's like, why is that stuff even there? Grr. Anywho. Speaking of popcorn, how much did you eat in Toronto, Yazdi, with all the movies that you saw? Did you eat popcorn in Toronto? because I think if I'd seen as many movies as you, I would have ended up looking like a popcorn kernel.
I did not eat too much popcorn, but I've figured out a system where I know enough places around where the cinemas are that I can go out and quickly grab, you know, like a panini from Starbucks or a cookie. So, you know, you're kind of replenished and raring to go as you go from one movie to another.
How many years is it you've been going to Toronto now?
I think this is my fifth year. This was my fifth year.
So tell us a little bit about the films that really stood out. Maybe give us your top three to watch. And then I have some questions I want to ask you about some of the films that you wrote up about.
And just before we go there, if you haven't already checked out Yazdi's posts at moviewallahs.com, do visit the website. I think you did a day-by-day account for three or four of the days that you were there. You know, I'm going to toot your horn a little bit here, Yazdi, but it's a really great overview of, I mean, I felt like it was being virtually there. So if you haven't checked out those posts, do hit them. Are they on Spaces in My Mind as well?
Not yet, but they will appear then shortly.
For those listeners that don't know, Yazdi also has his own spacesinmymind.blogspot.com blog, so check those out. But no, great. Thanks so much. I think it was a great service you did to all of the Movie Wireless fans. So
yeah, and I think you covered something like 15 to 20 films, Yazdi, in the post. So
check them out. So go on, tell us, answer Rashmi's question.
Yeah, tell us your top three to watch.
Yeah, so there's like 400 movies screening at TIFF, and, you know, with the best of your efforts, there's only a small part that you can sample. And, you know, in retrospect, there were a lot of movies that were on my list that I didn't actually fit into my schedule, which went on to win the Audience Award. So I can only speak within the confines of what I did see. And I'm almost reluctant to make too much out of some of these movies because I went in not knowing anything about these movies, and some of them really resonated with me. So I'll try to be as tempered as possible. But I think the one movie which stood out more than anything else for me was the movie called The Impossible, which stars Ewan McGregor and Naomi Watts.
That was one of the ones I wanted to ask you about, just because the cast is good. So
yeah, so the movie pretty much is a blow-by-blow account of what happens to a family of tourists in Thailand immediately after the tsunami hit Southeast Asia a few years ago. And it's based on a real story. And I think one of the reasons why the movie is as successful as it is because it's talking about a wide vista of everything that's happening, but it really concentrates on this one family. And, you know, they don't know if, you know, the other people are alive, and some of them are, some of them are not, what they had to go through in a minute-by-minute basis. And I think the movie is exceptionally well assisted by the CGI, which is used very sparingly, but when it's used to actually render these scenes of the tsunami, just the sound design, I mean, just every thunder, you really feel it within your scene. So it's very effective, yes.
And Yazdi, how does that compare to, and we mentioned Hereafter when we talked about the Clint Eastwood movie, how does it, you know, because that was also a tsunami movie. How does this one compare to that one?
I think, you know, Hereafter, it was one of four or five stories which Hereafter covered. I think this movie, by following so closely along with this family, you almost go through their experience as you're going, you know, as you're watching the movie. I know in many quarters this movie has been shrugged off as being overly manipulative or being too contrived, you know, or being too obvious. But, you know, you can try all the academic rationalizations you want, but at the end of the day, when you're sitting in the seat, you feel what you feel. And
right.
I was just devastated by this movie. It was a harrowing experience. I felt like I had gone through what those characters did. And I can tell you, the Toronto crowds, unlike Khan, they're not very generous with their applauses. And this movie got like a 5-minute standing ovation. People were too overwhelmed at the end of the movie to even ask their questions. I mean, you know, they were choked up. And I almost hesitate to build this movie up too much. I had a very strong emotional response.
And
to
do
it.
You think it's going to get a general release? Is this one likely to come into the theaters?
Yes, it's scheduled for a December release. It already has a distributor, and I'd be fantastic. Very surprised if Naomi Watts didn't get a nomination.
Okay, great. Okay, so number two on your list then.
Number two on the list is another movie which is getting a lot of buzz for Oscar nominations in the acting category, and that's the movie The Sessions.
Oh, again, see, that was also on my list.
You know, a true story based on a man in Berkeley who had childhood polio and, you know, subsequently through most of his adult life did not have any feeling from the neck down. And when he was in his 30s, he realized that he'd never had a physical relationship, and he decided to seek out and lose his virginity. And he engaged a sex therapist. And, you know, John Hawkes, who we've seen before in Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene, we've seen him do amazing work in Winter's Bone, for which he was also nominated, just does an amazing role in the lead character. And then Helen Hunt, you know, has a completely unexpected turn. You know, I haven't seen Helen Hunt like this at all, you know, play the sex therapist. And I think the only thing which is limiting this movie right now from getting more recognition is how sexually frank it is. And I think it might turn off a lot of people by right. how in your face it is about the sexuality. But beyond that, I think it's the kind of small movie which might really do wonders.
Yeah. Okay. And then number three, before I ask you my question.
The number three is a movie, and this is the reason why I go to film festivals, is to find a movie that I would have never thought to look at, you know, never even considered otherwise. It's a movie out of Paraguay. It's called Seven Boxes,
mm-hmm.
and it's sort of a low-tech, infinitely more ingenious, clever version of Premium Rush, and it's about these kids, you know, in a shanty town, in a small little city in Paraguay, who make a living by, you know, by carrying wheelbarrows, where they transfer goods from one part of the shantytown to another. And this kid is entrusted with transferring these seven wooden boxes. And before he knows it, you know, there are hundreds of people behind him trying to get at those boxes. And the cops are behind him and the bad guys are behind him. And it's so ingenious and it's so well crafted. And it just really broke my heart.
Wow.
I mean, I love for movies which come out of nowhere and just shake you up like that.
Wow.
Sounds like kind of a niche movie, though. Is it one that we're likely to see in the local AMC anytime soon?
Not to the local AMC, but I'm hoping that maybe at the Landmark Cinemas. I'm hoping somebody picks this up because it's such a crowd pleaser.
More of the artsy theatres.
Yeah.
Wow. So three of your picks then, Yazdi. The Sessions... Is it The Impossible?
The Impossible, yeah.
And Seven Boxes.
And so, I also want to give a shout out to three other movies, actually, and I'll be very quick. One is a Spanish language movie called Everybody Has a Plan, which has Viggo Mortensen speaking entirely in Spanish, playing a double role. And it's just such a nice, you know, film noir set in South America with people double and triple crossing each other.
And he was amazing sat right stuff. Near you by the sounds of it.
Yeah, I mean, I was sitting in the seat, and it was the most surreal experience I had at the entire film festival was sitting in a film scene, watching two Viggo Mortensens on the screen playing twin brothers, and then the actual Viggo Mortensen in the seat directly behind me. I mean, I
wow.
looked around, and there he was. So
you didn't have a ring on,
you know,
did you?
I love the fact that Viggo Mortensen decides to do a Spanish language film. I mean, good for him. Go on.
No, I was just making a really bad joke with a reference to, like, Lord of the Rings.
Go on.
I thought you were talking about Inception, where in some scenes Leo has the wedding ring and other ones he doesn't. So, anyway.
Okay.
That was a really bad joke.
That was a really bad joke.
And I still didn't get it.
I might have to edit that one out. So, Yazdi, before you give us the other two, the ones I wanted to ask, because these might be on your list... Thanks for Sharing and Arthur Newman.
Surprisingly, those were not on my list. Thanks for Sharing is a movie which I think just got picked up for distribution. It has an amazing star cast.
Yeah.
Mark Ruffalo is in it. Gwyneth
yep.
Paltrow is in it. Tim Robbins is in it. The singer Pink does a very auspicious acting debut. I mean, she's amazing in it. It's a good movie. It's got great ensemble acting, but I think ultimately... The movie's not as clever as it thinks it is,
so
but
it's
I think it's still going to do well.
Sex addicts.
Yeah.
And everyone's doing the sex addict thing. I think Michael Fassbender obviously started a trend from last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw your write-up of that, and I was disappointed because I think in terms of premise, that to me is a very simple premise, but recovering sex addicts in New York has so many ways that you can go with that. So and such comedic or even dramatic premise that I think looking at the cast, I think they were maybe heading towards the kind of playful exploration of that. But You seemed a little disappointed by that in your write-up.
I was, because, you know, I really like Mark Ruffalo. I think he has such a nice, understated vibe. And I wish the script was a little bit stronger. I mean, some of the one-liners are remarkably funny, but ultimately it seemed too much like Love and Other Drugs.
Oh.
That with Jake Gyllenhaal.
Maybe because Gwyneth was in it.
Yeah, Anne Hathaway.
Maybe they made a mistake by having Gwyneth.
So
she's good. She's
RashmiRants.blogspot.com is a full explanation of why and how Rashmi feels about Gwyneth Paltrow. I think that's all we need to do at this point.
Okay,
tell us your final two then, Yazdi, and I won't. And then maybe you can just give a quick one-liner on Arthur Newman, because I love Colin Firth.
Yes, Colin Firth. I mean, you know, he can do no wrong of late, and he's in this movie with Emily Blunt. And I think this movie, I was not prepared for how dark and melancholic the movie is, and I think it's going to be a tough sell. And it's a very brave movie, but I mean, I wanted to slash my wrists after I was done watching the movie. So I guess with those two, I really expected a more fun, engaging movie. And it's, you know, it really is a dark movie.
Okay.
The two movies I did want to bring up, which were an absolute delight. One is a movie called Frances Ha, which is directed by Noah Baumbach, who did Margot at the Wedding, who did The Squid and the Whale, who did a whole bunch of movies. And this one has got Greta Gerwig in it. And, you know, Greta Gerwig has made a career out of being lovable and delightful. And this is her most lovable and delightful movie, you know, which should speak to how lovable and delightful she is in this movie. It kind of plays like, you know, the French New Wave movies. It's shot in black and white. And, you know, I think to the movie's credit, it never tries to be a coming-of-age movie. And you realize after you've done seeing it that it is a coming-of-age movie. So it just works on all levels. And then the other movie that I really liked is a movie with Pierce Brosnan in a Danish movie. I mean, he has Danish language. You know, he's speaking Danish in a movie. He plays an American character. But in many ways, this movie, Love Is All You Need, is sort of a darker version of Mamma Mia. And that should give you an idea of the kind of movie it is. It's kind of fun.
I didn't like him in Mamma Mia, so...
But a dark version of Mamma Mia. I can't imagine what a horror that movie would be.
Was it a musical?
No, it's not a musical. It's about, you know, several people who gather together for a wedding and secrets are revealed. And, you know, it just has a fun... It's shot entirely in Italy and it's kind of a fun movie.
Cool.
It's a fun movie, yeah.
Great wrap-up, Yazdi.
So, I mean, Toronto is such a big festival. I mean, what do you think? Is it the fact that it's got close proximity to Oscar season, the fact that you get so many big releases here? I mean, what has been the history of that?
Yeah, so I think, you know, over the last several years, movies which won the Audience Award at Toronto have gone on to do exceptionally well at the Oscars. And so a lot of film studios now, you know, have actively used the Toronto Film Festival as a launchpad for their, you know, for their Oscar-heavy movies. You know, Slumdog Millionaire, which nobody had heard out of, won the Audience Award, you know, at Toronto and went on to win Best Film at the Oscars. The King's Speech, nobody had heard of, won the Audience Award last year. This year, the movie that won it is from the director of There Will Be Blood. I'm sorry, no. It's from David O. Russell, who did Three Kings and who did I Heart Huckabees. And it's a movie called Silver Linings Playbook. And it's got Jennifer Lawrence and Bradley Cooper and Robert De Niro. And it's supposed to be really funny and really dark. And Jennifer Lawrence is supposed to have a lock on a best acting performance.
Oh, my God.
So, I love the fact that the movies come out of Toronto with a lot of buzz about Oscars. And the other movie which has gotten a lot of buzz is Argo, which is
Ben
Affleck's third directorial movie. And again, guaranteed to win a lot of Oscar love when it opens stage.
Well, it's got that period thing going for it as well, and a story that I think is very interesting to many people. You know, it's about the siege in Iran of the hostages.
Not a fan of Affleck's direction, though, so I'll hold judgment on that one for a while.
See, I'm looking forward to that one.
Blasphemy!
Yes,
I thought The Town was
brilliant,
above mediocre.
Joe's wrong.
You're wrong, Joe.
I am wrong,
unfortunately.
Yeah.
And I think Toronto is kind of recognized now that people look to it as a launch pad for the big movies.
Right.
And so before every movie, they actually have this clip now where they say, please vote for the audience favorite. And they say, let's make the next big movie. And they've shown clips from both The King's Speech as well as Slumdog Millionaire because they recognize that's where they won their acclaim.
Yeah.
So it was terrific to have you on the ground. Thanks for covering the film festival for us. And thanks for doing the Daily Post, because it really was the next best thing to being there. So really appreciate that.
Yeah.
And again, I refer you to the MovieWala's main site. Do check out those posts by Yazdi.
Also available via our Facebook page.
No, and maybe next year, you know, we can even do a few podcasts while I'm there, and then we can, you know, do it live.
So Joe and I hope to go next year.
This can only get better. We can only build on it.
We hope to do it as a MovieWala's special, so we can cover, what is it, 3 movies a day, 5 days, 15, 45 movies?
Yeah, but it seems like it's a full-on schedule. I mean, it seems like every day is pretty much wall-to-wall movies, and there's not a lot of time in between, but... No, the posts were terrific. I could see you were burning the midnight oil to get those out daily. So, muchos apreciados, if that is the appropriate Spanish term.
Was nothing I'd rather be doing. Even though I was exhausted, it's the best kind of exhaustion. Love it.
So, until our next show, too many movies, too little time. Good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.